Welcome to the Brothers Murph Get Smart, a weekly podcast in which two brothers, namely myself, Michael Lee Murphy,
and myself, Nick Murphy,
attempt to become more knowledgeable about this great, big, beautiful world and all the things in it. And joined with us this week is the idyllic
Casey Brown.
Yeah, dude. Went to the dictionary for that one, baby.
Idyllic?
I new I words everywhere.
Yeah, idyllic. Like picturesque, very peaceful, calm, happy. It's everything that you are, man.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's nice.
You're welcome. So this week, guys, we're going to be talking about a subject that we're all very passionate about, but one of us in particular, and that subject is going to be board games. I'm talking
board rooms.
B-O-A-R-D. Board rooms, man. Most of them are triangular, rectangular, but we're going to go try this.
Sweet here. Triangular board rooms.
Probably Google or something. I was like literally picturing a rectangle.
My triangle is the most soothing of all polygons, and yeah. That's why we have
everyone like is the most equal in a triangle. Everyone's in one corner, and you just rush to the middle and be like, "I'm gonna sell to that man right there." So we're talking
So they're all in their own corner. Yeah. Just be like waiting for their turn to go.
It's like a caucus.
It's a triangular caucus.
Yeah,
and the selling point's in the middle. They all wait. It has to be touching the wall, you know, before they run into the middle.
And the intern's got a timer. He's like, and go. Not myself with that man right there.
Hot deal pickles are the best.
So yes.
So Mike and Nick work in a triangular boardroom selling pickles.
If ever we get to the point where we get to have an office for this podcast, it's going to be weird and triangular and amazeballs, and everyone will be equal.
It will not be.
And we'll have like world, we'll have like world champion wrestling belts and stuff for people that like argue the best in the boardroom. So we're talking about board games, okay? B-O-A-R-D, board games, tabletop games. We've all played or heard of board games before, I think.
Yes, indeed.
Right?
Yeah.
I would say so.
Everybody knows Monopoly.
Sure. Knows Monopoly. We had a communal game of Sorry in our neighborhood that our neighbors bought us, and it's for all the kids on the street. Yep. And it lived at our house, but everyone could play Sorry. But we've all stepped it up a little bit since then, especially our expert for today, who is Nick the Man Murphy right here.
Woo!
Twist! One of the titular characters.
Oval face in the house.
Yeah.
We decided
I'll play with oval faces, girl.
So yeah, Nick is gonna lead us down the path of board games. We've all gotten into board games, and I think it's really in large part due to Nick. At least for me it is, because you have shown
more or less
me the
forced
way.
It on everyone that we know.
Yeah. And I think for the better. Board games are amazing, and so you're gonna tell us a little bit about it. And I guess without further ado, just take it away, man.
What is a board game?
What is it?
That's well, my question.
That's a long story. No, it's a board game is any kind of tabletop game, and board game usually falls under like a lot of dice games are considered board games, but not like gambling games, like, you know, craps isn't considered a board game.
But what is? Oh
man, I lost like 150 last night playing board games, dude. At the table, it did not go well.
So is a board not required? Is Yahtzee a board game?
Technically, no, but it falls under the umbrella of board games.
Okay.
Like card games are also considered what the term should be is tabletop games, which is what a lot of people, for most people, just kind of say board games as like a general title for all of them. But really what they are is tabletop games, because all of them, like Yahtzee, you play on a table. Card games, you're playing Uno, you're playing that on a table. Uno's not a board game. A board game technically has to have a board. But like ultimately, when I say board games, I'm talking about board games, card games, dice games, all of those kind of things, because board games is kind of like a universal term for it, even though it's technically not really correct. Tabletop game is a better term for it, but everyone just says board games.
So this podcast about tabletop games.
Yeah.
Specifically.
Yeah. And I love board games. I've more obsession is more starting to become more of a word. Like Mike's an actor. Mike loves movies more than like basically anyone I know. And Mike, you would say that you're probably on IMDb every single day, right?
Absolutely.
Exactly. He checks it multiple times a day. That's how I am with board games. The main board game website in the world is called BoardGameGeek.com. It's the biggest board game website in the world. That's where every board game pretty much ever is on that website, with a description and who the designer was. And it's ranked, and there's all these rankings and da-da-da, all this kind of stuff.
This episode brought to you by BoardGameGeek.com.
You get that sweet Board Game Geek money, dude.
I'm sure they're rolling in it.
Yeah, so much. But I check it probably probably close to 10 times a day. Nothing ever changes. Not much changes. But I check it.
Is there ever like flash news for the board game world? Like,
oh, that, yeah. If you're in it, yeah, for sure. So it's like
10 o'clock and I got to get back at noon. What if there's some sort of news break that happens?
Yeah. And I mean, it's not that, like, trust me, it's unnecessary how much I check
it. No, that's fine. I'm on Disney blogs all the time.
Yeah. But I mean, there is big news in the board game. It's a lot of times it's mostly because new games are coming out from a well-known publisher, or a lot of times well-known designer, because again, designers design multiple games a lot of times. And if there's like, oh, there's gonna be the new Reiner Knizia game, everyone's like, wah! And they freak out. That's a big designer, an older designer. He's designed
we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And so I love them. I'm obsessed with them. I got into board games pretty recently. I had a girlfriend of the time who, her family loved board games and they would play them. So I kind of started playing them with them. And I just started falling in love with them, and we got a few.
Would you say you loved board games more than your girlfriend?
It's a longer lasting.
I didn't leave. We didn't break up because of board games. Not like, she's like, it's me or them. And I was like, I can't give her up. So that's why we broke up. But so then I started getting some, and we had a couple, and it was great for like a couple years. We had like three or four or five of like, kind of like strategy games, and we really liked them. And then I don't know when the switch happened from like, oh, I like this is kind of like a fun little thing that we do every once in a while, to like full on, this is like what I do all the time. I don't really know when it happened or why, but all of a sudden out of nowhere, we just started accumulating games, I mostly started accumulating games, which meant that Mike did as well. And we just, and then all of a sudden now it's just like, we have probably 80 or so board games that we play like somewhat regularly. Then we have a bunch of board games like the Monopolies and stuff that we never play, but we still have them.
We have evolved well beyond Monopoly.
Yeah, it's turned into a whole thing. So first what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through some of the history of board games.
Cool.
Because history is always interesting. As Casey, me and her were talking earlier, the history of things oftentimes ends up being more interesting than you would think. You're like, oh, what's the history of board games? It's actually pretty cool. So we're going, just as a quick guess, where do you think when do you think the first board game came out?
If I may ask, so would this be a game that literally has a board, or is this like the first people that were rolling people's like bones as dice?
That. The latter.
Caveman times, man. Like, whatever, whatever, BC.
Okay. Whatever, whatever, BC. What do you think, guys?
I'm going to win with that for sure.
Well, I don't know. I mean, that seems like a very amorphous question. I would guess that the first thing that we would say maybe still play today would, I'm betting China or India came up with it probably like 3,000 years ago. Yeah,
you defeat your enemy, you rip out their molars, and you throw them down, and you're like, yahtzee! That was the first game.
So I guess more of what I was asking for is like, when did the first, I guess we can see that this is the first kind of game that people were playing. So the first dice kind of games, again, we see that there are kind of dice type objects. We don't know what the games were. Goes all the way back to 5,000 BC.
Damn.
And yeah, it's
told you whatever, whatever BC.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly what I was picturing in my head. The whatever I was thinking, like 5,000 BC.
Yeah, 5,000 BC. Sure you were. In ancient Mesopotamia, they found like 4-sided dice made out of like knuckle bones, which I think is just rad.
Sonar.
They used to take very long, flat sticks and then paint them the different sides, different colors. And when you would throw them, whatever they landed on, that would be like your roll. So those are a kind of dice.
Yeah, yeah.
And then if you look at dice from like Roman times, they look like our die. Like they're exactly the same. 6-sided die. They have little pips on them. Like, I mean, it's kind of eerie just how die have not changed like at all. So we've gone through dice games now, but we don't know what those games were. We just have seen that like these are the oldest evidence that we can see of dice.
Sure.
And so
is there any like dice in Pompeii? Like you could go and see like a bunch of
throwing crap.
Yeah, yeah.
Some guy mid throw is like, it's going to be a 7.
That would be really cool.
That'd be awesome. It's still like encrusted in the air.
Yeah.
Not that I know of, but that would be rad.
Yeah. Just one guy in the background like celebrating already, and he's just frozen in like, yeah. Sorry, this is a good image.
So the oldest board game that's different. Dice, sure. But the oldest board game that we know of is a game called Senet. It's a Senet. It's an ancient Egyptian game. It's from 3100 BC.
Jeez.
And there are hieroglyphics you can see, and it was played by the pharaohs with like their peoples and stuff like that. It was played them on the pharaohs, and the winners were thought to be under the protection of the major gods. And so it was a kind of war game. They don't really know what the rules were, again, because it's a lot. No one wrote down the rules for a lot of these games, and so. But
didn't say somewhere there wasn't a Rosetta Stone for Senet.
Just like, hey guys, you know, Gerald always tries to do this move. That's not part of the rules. That's not official.
Ancient Egypt. Pharaoh Gerald.
He was a douche. Everyone hated that one.
Pharaoh Gerald.
Pharaoh Gerald. Yep. So then after Senet, we come to the longest running board game that's still played today.
Okay.
I bet it's Chinese checkers.
It is not Chinese checkers.
Is it Othello?
No.
Damn.
I don't know. Mancala. It's from 2650. It's called the Royal Game of Ur, I believe. It usurped recently backgammon. Backgammon has been played since 2000 BC. But the Royal Game of Ur is a little bit older.
How do you spell that?
U-R.
Okay.
So I'm just going with Ur.
Royal Game of Ur.
Or Ur, maybe. Or it's
mostly flinging mud at one another. And then you like move a pawn for space.
And they go, you hit me with mud.
You hit me with mud. Now you're the mud captain. You're the mud captain. Cover yourself in mud. Cover yourself in mud. And whoever makes the biggest pile wins.
Still play today.
Most of the time we lose the board in the mud somewhere. But, you know, sometimes you find a random board and you're like, new game of mud. Royal game of air.
New game of air.
Again, everyone was British.
Why?
Everyone was comically British.
Why in the royal game of Ur are these the paupers of England?
Because you're getting to pretend to be royalty, but ultimately exactly. You make a mud crown, but you're still mud people.
Okay, what is this game really?
So I'm not entirely sure how it was played, but it was a long. They've seen like boards of it. They found boards of it like in burial tombs and stuff like that. Because a lot of times games were buried with like Senet boards were buried with like the pharaohs and stuff like that.
Yeah, because of how important they were to them.
Exactly. They're like, you had the favor of the gods. You got to be buried with this right here. That and cats, you know, and stuff like
Some
that.
Some dude's going to take him down to the underworld. It's like, oh, he won Senet. Okay, you're good.
You're good, man. Don't worry about it. You can go back up. So it's thought to be long dead, but a guy named Irving Finkel, who was a big board game enthusiast and scholar and stuff, discovered the game rules because they just found the board and they're like, oh, this is definitely a board game. He found the rules carved into a stone tablet. And then shortly after that, he kind of randomly saw like a photo of someone in India with an identical board.
And so a current day photo.
Yeah, like a current day photo. Someone with an identical board. So he tracked this person down. It was like, what are you playing? And he's like, oh, we've been playing this game since we were kids. It's been passed down. So the Royal Game of Ur is still being played today.
Wow.
And backgammon was thought to be the longest played game ever, 2,000 years, but it's not. The Royal Game of Ur has usurped it.
When was it from?
2650.
Wow. Yeah. From India?
I think around that area, yeah. A lot of these games came from the Middle East.
Wow.
And then, I mean, where their origin from is probably kind of hard to tell because there was so much of a trading area, you know?
Yeah, people move around.
I'm going to blame that region because they're like, we're going to give the world this amazing stuff that's board games, but we're also going to give them calculus. So screw them.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you, smart people of the Middle East, for giving us awesome board games and then stupid calculus that I had to take in high school.
Dumb. Hate it.
Here's why the joke's on you, because just stop after Algebra 2. That's what I did. Boom.
That's why we're smart. And then 1300 BC, Ludus was invented. Ludus is like a strategy game, again, still played today. And they think it was invented in Rome, and they think it was invented around that time because Rome was just always at war. It was always a really tumultuous time. And so they think that's why like military games kind of started becoming more popular with Ludus, because like, oh, we're always at war. Let's do this on a little board. And then in 500 BC, this isn't a board game, but I thought it would be kind of cool to mention, is the first time you really see like a kid's game, because all these games are always played by adults, a lot of times by the royalty, not really by the commoners and the peasant people. But the first game of hopscotch was played in Roman times in 500 BC. They found like a little hopscotch thing made out of stones. And I was like, that's kind of cool. Hopscotch, 500 BC. Who would have thunk? And then at 400 BC, I think it's pronounced Liopo is made in Eastern culture, and that's worth mentioning because all of these, this is the first game coming out of the East, I believe out of China, that we know of that was made there. Like a lot of the board games had been in China beforehand, but they were always from the Middle East, and they were usually like interpretations of those games. And this is the first one to come out of the East that we know of. It's called Liu Bo. And then now we're going to jump up to 400 AD. And then this is around the chess era. This is when like kind of chess type games started happening. So Tafl games, T-A-F-L, I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly, came out of the Celtic and Germanic areas. And it's on a grid, like a, you know, perfect square grid. And you always have, you have the different guys you're moving around. There's a lot of different incarnations of those kind of games. But in 600 AD is when modern chess started coming around. And it's changed since then a little bit, here and there. Again, like most games, they morph and stuff, but that's like where more modern chess was seen. It was around 600 AD. And then 700 AD is when the first incarnations of Moncala came around. And Moncala, they seems like there were tons of different games that were all, because Moncala apparently was like one of many similar games. But 700 AD is when Moncala started.
Moncala, for people who maybe have never played it, you should, because it's very fun and kids love it because it's very easy to understand. But it's this game that's like a wooden board with these kind of semicircle holes into it. And there's these pretty marble pieces that you have to kind of transport across the board. And there's different rules. But anyway, everyone should try to play Moncala. My sister and I played so much Moncala.
Yeah, totally. We played a lot up at Grandma Jane's house. And yeah, I love Moncala. That's why I want to mention it. But right now we're going to jump much farther ahead. We're going to jump all the way up to 1903.
There was nothing in between?
There was, but like I'm trying
to. 1,000 years?
No, there were, but I'm trying to hit like the things that people know of. Like Moncala is still around today. That's why I'm trying to.
There were several mud-based games. Different incarnations. There's one where you can make a ball. Ones where you make other shapes.
Trapezoids.
We're moving on. Yeah.
What I'm hearing is that we should devote an entire other podcast to that 1,000 years.
I am so down. I'm trying to like just knock through a whole bunch of history right now. I'm excited to do a whole history of board games.
Hell yeah.
Podcast, because I think it would be
cool. Because this is just the intro.
Yeah, this is just the intro to whole board games. But in 1903, there's a game that you might seem a little familiar with who you all. It's called The Landlord's Game.
Oh.
Any idea what that might have turned into?
Hey, Tony, I need rent. Tony.
Yeah, it's like a role play.
I'll pay you rent when you get rid of my roaches.
My guess would be like what would become Monopoly.
Yeah, it would become Monopoly.
Cool.
So it was designed by Lizzie Maggie, one of the first American designers. Was a woman. Hell yeah.
Boom, boom.
But it's really interesting. It was very, very similar, but there are certain things that were different. One thing that made me laugh is like when you pass go, when you only get $100, not $200.
Boo.
But instead of being called go, it's called labor upon Mother Earth produces wages. Which I think I was like, what a
do
nice
not
way
pass
to say.
Labor upon Mother Earth creates wages.
Yeah, exactly. It cracked me up. But it was really cool because it was actually a practical demonstration of land grabbing and the negative effects. That's what the game was made for. It's essentially to show that like property owners are like really, really greedy and that tenants are the ones that suffer because of it. Huh. And it was a way for, she thought it was like, this is a way for like people to understand what's happening to them and why it's happening to them. If you put it into a game, they'll understand like, oh, this is what's happening in my building. Like, this is what my tenant's doing to me. Like, I stop on boardwalk. It's not called boardwalk. I can't remember what the big spot is. But it's like, oh, man, like, this is BS. This is what my tenant's doing to me. I don't like that. And she specifically made it simple enough where kids could play it because then children are naturally suspicious of people being unfair. They're like, that's unfair constantly, you know? And so that those kids from playing Monopoly, when they grow up, they would be like, oh yeah, that was unfair. And then they would change it once they grew up. So it kind of was like this big social thing.
Dang,
and then
Lizzie?
They sold it to Parker Brothers for $500 and then they just changed it into Monopoly.
Oh.
And they're so, just like, get rich quick.
Yeah, pretty much. So
when they sold it to Parker Brothers?
1935.
Oh, okay.
They sold it to Parker Brothers.
So that's
Brothers.
When it became the name Monopoly.
And that's
Monopoly.
When it became more or less Monopoly. Yeah, and Monopoly hasn't really changed much.
Because I'm just picturing, because he said 1903, I'm just picturing Teddy Roosevelt like, I love this game. Let's break up all these monopolies. And he's just like, doesn't understand the rules to the game. And he's like trying to ruin it the whole time.
The whole point is getting
just like, when can I shoot somebody? And you're like, that's not part of this game. I'm going to shoot the landlord.
I'm going to bust this trust up.
Can I bring my bear? And you're like, no. Leave your bear home.
You got to pay the bear tax.
Yeah. So that was the Landlord's Game, or more commonly known as Monopoly. Now, Monopoly, you know, is the biggest board game ever. So now we're going to jump forth to 1960 and 70. Again, there are other board games that came out, but I want to jump forward to this because this is when like German board games hit the market. Germany to this day still is the ruler of board games. Germany loves board games. It's like a huge thing over there. The biggest board game convention in the world is in Germany.
What's it called?
The Essen Spielfair.
Oh, I want to go to that.
Yeah, so do I. So badly.
The Essen Spielfair. Awesome.
The Essen Spielfair. We're going to do a lot of, sorry, German listeners, if there's any of you. I might have a really bad.
Basically, all you offensive. Bring your meeples and try your best.
Try your best to beat me as a German Spielfair.
The Essen Spielfair.
Yes, indeed.
Every winner gets free bratwurst. Und Sauerkraut is extra. God. Don't even ask for ketchup.
This is like the one podcast we really shouldn't do our dumb German voices, and it's just going to happen. It has to.
Sorry.
Have you finally nailed down your German voice?
My German voice has been killer for years.
It's the only, it's that and British are the only ones we can do.
Okay.
Because the rest just turn into either German or British.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so we are a two-trick pony here.
But it's a big deal in Germany, board games, and they parents play with their kids a lot. It's seen as not like, the power's out. Let's play a board game. It's seen as something to help develop kids and help develop, like, the family and stuff, and it's really, like, a bigger deal there. And that's why, like, Germany became kind of the leader and still is the leader for board games. And even now, the biggest award for board games every year is called the Spiel des Jahres. And it is just stands for German Game of the Year, but that's like the most prestigious award. The winner of the Spiel des Jahres is always like, oh, it's like the Game of the Year, and da da da. And even then, it's kind of like the Oscars. Like, there's very strict guidelines for it, and certain kinds of games usually win. But like, nonetheless, it's a very still to this day the biggest award. And then in 1995, I would say. That's when Settlers of Catan came out, which is a very, very popular game. And I want to mention that because that's really what brought games is kind of more to the mainstream. A lot of people, like, they're like, I don't really play board games. Oh, I've played Settlers of Catan, though. That's like a lot of people's like kind of way into like more strategy games and what are called Euro games.
Okay.
So
Euro games.
Euro games.
Meaning coming from Europe or being of Europe. European design generally or style?
Yeah. So generally, like, there are a whole bunch of different board games, a whole bunch of different genres of board games. But like, more or less, and again, very, broadly, more or less, they can fall into like two categories. There's Euro games and then now what are called Amerithrash games. It's actually pronounced Ameritrash games. The Euro gamers don't really like the Amerithrash gamers, and so they call them Ameritrash. But people are trying to change it to Amerithrash because it's unnecessarily negative,
And seriously.
So Euro games, the main difference is they're both strategy games. So basically right now we're moving past games like Monopoly. Like, Monopoly does have strategy, but again, like, board gaming is seen very much in this negative light as like, board games are the things that you do when there is nothing else to do. like when you've just run out of options, there's no more mud. You can't play any games. Like, there's nothing to do. All the girls are gone. It's just like, there's nothing to do. The power's out. All right, I guess we'll play Risk, or I guess we'll play like Monopoly or whatever. Sure. And a lot of these games, we play as kids, like Candyland and stuff. There's literally no strategy in the entire game.
Why did I always win?
I don't know.
Riddle me this.
You'd pocket certain cards.
Just kidding. I didn't.
Yeah. But it's like, you roll some die and you move. And the next person rolls
and
die.
It is true, though, that you play games when you're little. Like, I'm sure everybody could name a million games they played when they were little. And then you turn into, a teenager, and it's, like, super uncool to play board games. Except if you're me and you play Game of Life all the time.
Yeah.
With a very specific set of cards you always want to get. But I only want the farm. I never want anything else. I'm like, why play Life if you can't grow garbanzo beans? But anyway.
That's fair.
But most people, like, you play Candyland and Hi-Ho Cheerio and Chutes and Ladders, and then you stop when you're, like, nine. Maybe, should we blame video games? No, because this hadn't happened for a longer time than video games.
Kids still play video games, when they're kids. But but that's one thing, is we're moving past those kind of games, because even then there are kids games that are still strategic and still like teach kids different things. But like those kind of games have such a negative connotation behind them because a lot of the really mass market, like popular mainstream games suck. Like they're horrible. Like Monopoly's yeah. a horrible game. And so it's like, the problem is when people think of board games, everyone's like, oh, like Monopoly. And I'm like, no, Monopoly's horrible. I'm so sorry that you don't know any other board games, because in Germany and stuff like that, in Europe, these strategy games came about, and Euro games are based on, again, strategy and taking out all the luck from the game. A really good Euro game is a game that has like literally no luck in it. Like you should just, everything should just be about strategy. And if you won, it's because you did better than the other
people. You outplayed your opponent.
And Euro games tend to be kind of stark. They sometimes have a theme over them, like, oh, this is about farming. But ultimately, like, there's no theme to it. It's just, it's all mechanics. You do this and you do this and do this, and there's just strategy. Whereas Amerithrash games tend to have a lot more theme. They have a very big basis on theme.
What's an example of like a Euro game that people might know?
Settlers of Catan is the biggest Euro game that's ever existed.
Okay.
It's the most popular. But again, if you ever played Settlers of Catan, it's just like, yeah, it's about like gaining resources, but it's like, really, it's just a bunch of different tiles, and this tile gives you this, this tile gives you this, and you build roads. That's it. It's very simple. It's very straightforward.
But there's luck in that game.
There is luck. So not all Euro games are like completely devoid of luck, but they try to take out as much luck as possible.
For simplicity's sake, let's say there's Euro games and Amerithrash, and Nick, can you explain a little bit, or I guess there's Amerithrash has more themes and more everything, and Euro games more just mechanic based.
More mechanic based. They tend to be, Amerithrash tends to be a lot bigger. Like they're just more production. Any game with like miniatures is considered generally an Amerithrash game. They have a lot of really cool components, like again, like the miniatures and like all this different stuff. They tend to be more complicated, have like a lot of rules and such. And Euro games very much like, we want it to be very simple, like easy to learn, high in strategy, is like, that's kind of Euro game, whereas Amerithrash is more about like the experience.
What's an example of a very popular Amerithrash game?
At this point, I'd probably say something like Zombicide is a very, very like typical Amerithrash game. It's a very big game, very long game, miniatures everywhere, giant board. You need a huge table to play it. It's just got tons of theme and stuff, and it's really about the journey of the whole thing. And nowadays, there are a lot of games that are trying to kind of breach the hybrid status of being like part Euro and part Amerithrash. A really good example of that is this game called Blood Rage, which we have. I don't think you've played it, but it's a good kind of mix between Euro and Amerithrash, which is really good, but it's tough to do. And especially because a lot of people push against it, because a lot of people are like, I only play Euro games or I only play Amerithrash games, and they don't like to mix at all, which is, in my opinion, dumb, but whatever. So that's the general two categories of games. Again, like there's party games and there's kids games, but those are the ones I'm mostly focusing on. I kind of want to talk about like why I love games, like why they've become such a big like part of my life, to the point where it's like we play board games at least 3 or 4 nights a week. I would say at least me and Mike do.
Sure.
I love them for a number of reasons, because a lot of people say like, why wouldn't I just play video games? Like video games, you know, are easier. You know, there's cool graphics and all this kind of stuff. And the reason for me is because I like to be around people, and not that people who play video games don't, but it's like, that's a big deal to me, is in a world that where more and more of our life is being put onto screens. Like, you know, no one talks on the phone anymore. They text instead. You know, people talk online. Everything is being put on screens. Everyone's watching TV and playing all these video games. Kids are getting raised doing, you know, nowadays, a lot of parents, I feel like, just hand their kid an iPad, you know, and the kids are just sitting there playing games while they're waiting for dinner to happen or something like that. And I just think that board games, for the most part, and there are board games that are online and you can play them online, but for the most part, you have to sit down at a table with another human being.
Yeah.
And you just have to sit there and play. And I think that's a huge deal. It's a thing where you just can't really get around it. Like, you have to sit down with other humans and interact with them, because even if it's a game where you're not talking much, it's like, you're still there. You're still with them. You're still going to discuss the game.
You still have to be present happening somewhere.
Yeah. And I think that's a huge deal, and something that doesn't happen very much anymore. I mean, you just see all the time people are out with their friends and everyone's just sitting on their phone, looking down at their phone, and it's just, no one's interacting. There's not this like meaningful, like this again, like meaningful interaction, I feel like, is lacking in our culture nowadays. And again, it's not really like, It's because of this. It's just because that's where technology is heading. Like, technology has made it where we just don't interact quite as much anymore. And I think that's important to do that. And I think games is the perfect way to do that and a way to keep that kind of interaction alive. Because if you're playing like a big party game, you're just having a raucous, great time. If you're playing a strategy game, you're sitting there and you're still the interaction and the moving back and forth is just, it's just such a good, like, just important thing that I feel like we're starting to lose. But then on top of that, is it like, because they're strategy games, it requires like critical thinking, like requires planning and strategy and working out the best way to do things and trying to figure out, you know, oh, if I take this and I do this, I'll be able to do this, but then that might do that. And then it's planning ahead and trying to figure out, you know, what's the optimal position you can be in and all this kind of stuff. And I think, again, that's also very important because it's just, your brain is just working. Your brain is practicing. Your brain is getting better and smarter. And I think that's also very important.
Do you think board games make you smarter?
I would say so. I would say they make you more, probably better at analyzing and critical thinking because, especially in games that are maybe a little more complex, it's like you really, or games that are referred to as brain burners, it's like when you get done, your mind is just like, oh, okay, we need to like take a second back because we just worked real hard. It's like having a workout, you know? And I think that board games do make you smarter. And there actually isn't that much research on like the benefits of board games of a developmental, is that a word?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Developmental standpoint, particularly in kids. I was actually listening to this podcast recently, and one of the contributors from the podcast, he's like a doctor, and he's starting to now do research.
What's the podcast?
The podcast is the Dice Tower podcast. The Dice Tower is the biggest name in like board game media. They have a big YouTube channel, the most popular one. They're the heads of the whole media, and they're great. I again watch them every day. They come out probably like 5 or 6 videos a day. Wow. I watch all of them. They're great, and they have a weekly podcast that they've been doing for years and years, and they have a bunch of contributors on the podcast that do a whole bunch of different segments on everything, really. And one of the guys is talking about developmental things with board games and children because there's not really much research on it. Because to me, it's like it seems like a very beneficial thing for kids like at a young age, because again, there's all different kinds of games. Some of them are kids games and very, very easy, but then they get more and more complex as you go on. And so you can have your child, or I think there should be board games at schools and stuff like that. Cause again, it's just critical thinking and analyzing. All that stuff is good to do.
Yeah. So if you like, you know, I'm sure we have listeners here that haven't really had much experience with board games. I think we're very lucky that we've kind of found this hobby and passion. Are there any games that you can recommend for people who want an easy way into board games? Because some of the games we play, even for us, are daunting.
Yeah.
On the outset, when you're looking at it, there's of pieces.
Yes.
It seems like a lot of rules. And then once you break it down, you're like, okay, now I get it. But it's kind of scary.
Yeah, they play board games, Mike and Nick, with like rule books that are literally books, like 70-page rule books. Yeah. And they're like reading it in their spare time, like it's recreational reading. Yeah, to read these instruction manuals for games. And I'm just like, you guys play it through a bunch of times and then teach it to me like I'm 6. Yeah. And please make it so it's not hard to learn, because it's my least favorite thing in the world is learning new board games. Dear God. Yeah. I love playing games, but teach me one. I better be in a good mood, because otherwise I'm going to be grumpy until I can win it.
Yeah, Casey basically wants to know how to destroy her enemies first.
Well, no, because I dispute that. One of my favorite things about board games, now that I've played so many of them, is, you know, like,
is Nick watching was people cry.
No, gosh, no, because, you know, Nick was talking about how, you know, all their benefits. I think one of the cool things is the more you get into it, the more you realize that it's not just like, you know, Monopoly, where it's like dog eat dog. I played a game of Monopoly in economy one time in high school in my econ class. Economics, not economy, my econ class.
Economy
and
class.
Literally, like, by the end of it, I was like, am I gonna stay friends with these people?
Yeah.
It was so competitive. And board games that I've played now are cooperative and they're so fun. You can play with other people towards the same goal and you don't have to beat anybody.
Sure.
Or like, that's like my favorite kind of games. I'm not a competitive person. I mean, according to Mike, I want to rip everybody's throats out or whatever you said.
I'm just saying.
But I much prefer games that you can like work with as a team to defeat a common enemy or, you know, like get a certain goal. And there's so many games that do that that I never would have known about had I not like gotten more into.
Yeah, I would say my favorite genre of game is probably cooperative games, games where you're all on the same team. It's like blackjack. You're all against the dealer, you know, and it's just right. You're all the same team. You're playing against the game. That's probably my favorite. But that's one thing I like about games is like, again, people know of about five games like Monopoly, Sorry, Life, Risk, and
Chutes and Ladders.
Chutes and Ladders.
Great exactly. Games.
Great games. Nah, I actually don't like really. I like Sorry. That's bad, probably it. But there's so many different games. Like there's really mean games, like really, really mean games. But then there's games where you're up against each other and there's conflict, but it's like indirect conflict. You're not like openly being like ha or what are called take that games. Cause it's like, I take that and take that and take that. And I'm going to take all your cards and all your women and all your,
gems. All your mud.
Yeah. Game of, that's an expansion for, I get to take your mud.
I'll get to take your mud edition.
Yeah, exactly. It's not very eloquent.
Yeah, there's literally so many game.
So if you're like, are really one of those, like, I just want to kill everyone and stuff like that, you can play those games. But if you're like, I want to play a competitive game, but it's more like if I win, it's just because I played slightly better than everyone else. It's not because like I messed them up and they were building this whole thing, but then I destroyed it, you know, because like I don't like really cutthroat games because I just don't find them to be fun. If they're competitive, I like it to be like indirectly competitive where it's like, oh, I just played a little better. Woo. Sure. I'm not competitive at all. I don't ever feel the need of crushing people.
Yeah. I prefer those kinds of games too. I mean, trivia games I'll get competitive about, but that's a different.
That's because she's the smartest.
No. Yeah. That's because I'm stupid about trivia.
That's your jam, you know?
It is. But yeah, anyway, sorry. That was my tangent about cooperative games. No, totally. So you've got some games you'd recommend.
I do. I have a list of five.
Are any
games.
Of them cooperative?
Yes. One is cooperative. Yes, one is cooperative. The rest are competitive. But so this is a game of what are called gateway games. It's like gateway drugs. So this is a good way to get in because like Casey said, it's very daunting to learn new games and it's really terrible. So these are games that are very easy to learn, very easy to get into. The concepts of them are not hard to grasp. But at the same time, still require strategy and still require thinking. But then on top of that are a lot of fun. But this is somewhere you can take people who have never even played Monopoly and they can learn these games very quickly. And you guys can play and have a good time. So I'll start with five. We'll go to one. So
So this would be in order of your favorite gateway games? Five to one?
Probably. Okay. To teach people.
Cool.
So number five, I would say is, I put it number five because it might be a hair above gateway game in terms of like difficulty. But frankly, we've taught it to people many times. I don't think anyone really has a hard time grasping it. And it's just a lot of fun. So the first one is Small World.
Oh, yeah.
So Small World, it was designed by Philip K-Arts, and it was released in 2009. Small World, if you like Risk, but you don't want to play a game for 9 hours, I think Small World is a great Risk kind of games. You're taking a bunch of different fantasy characters like dwarves or orcs or or giants or something like that, and they all have a special ability. So they might be like undead orcs or flying goblins or something like that, and you have two abilities and then you're just conquering and then people are conquering you, and it's a conflict heavy game, but it never feels mean because the game just, the whole point is you're on a world and the world is just too darn small and you can't fit everybody.
Everyone's bumping into each other.
People are just conquering each other and it's just a blast, but it never feels like mean, and it's right. Pretty easy to grasp and it's just a good time, especially if you like those Risk kind of games. So number five is Small World.
Solid
number
game.
Four, Casey does not like. Just going to point that out. If you are a Ravenclaw, never play number four, which is Sheriff of Nottingham.
Oh, God.
Yes. Casey does not like Sheriff of Nottingham.
So good.
So Sheriff of Nottingham was designed by Sergio Haliban and Andre Zatz and was released in 2014. What were you going to say, Kay?
Well, you keep saying designed by, and it's real quickly, is this like, what does that mean?
This is the person who designed the whole game. So they thought of the theme, the mechanics, they made all the rules.
I see. Okay.
And then they usually sell it to a publisher and the publisher publishes it. Or sometimes a publisher says like, hey, we really want a Viking game. Design one for us. But they're the ones who make the whole game. Usually from top to bottom, but sometimes there are many designers. Sometimes there's just one. It kind of just depends on the game. So Sheriff of Nottingham is a great game if you like to lie. And if you're a Gryffindor.
No, a Slytherin. So, jeez.
Or, yeah, that's true. Slytherins will be good at it, too. Basically, if you're not, if you're all logic, no, you're going to hate the game.
Yeah. You explain the game, and I'll tell everyone right, why I hate it so much.
Exactly. Casey refuses to play this game anymore.
She hates it because she lost, to be fair. But go
no.
ahead.
Okay, so of games I lose
Sheriff
all the
Nottingham
time.
Is there's the Sheriff of Nottingham. He's this little guy, and everyone gets to be the Sheriff of Nottingham. Everyone else is a merchant in this city of wherever. And so you are trying to
what? City next to Nottingham.
Oh yeah, sorry, Sheriff of Nottingham. Sorry,
it's just some city,
in Detroit or something. Some I don't know. Yeah, no, good job, Nick. Woo! So you are trying to smuggle goods past the sheriff. So you have this little bag and you have goods and you're bringing in apples and you're bringing in corn and all this kind of stuff, but you can also bring in like crossbows and booze and all the stuff that you're not allowed to bring in the city of Nottingham.
Contraband, it's called,
because we're a city of good people who don't like crossbows. So you go to the sheriff, whoever's the sheriff for that turn, you go, Sheriff, I am bringing in 2 chickens and 4 apples. And then the sheriff then has to decide whether or not they think that you're lying. If they think you're lying, they're going to take your little satchel, you put your cards, and they're going to open it. If you were truthful, then they have to pay you. If you were lying, then you have to pay them. So you essentially go like, I'm bringing in 2 apples and 3 carrots, but you actually are bringing in 1 apple and 4 crossbows. And so it's kind of this game of like trying to outlie each other and trying to find all these like sneaky ways of lying to each other.
You can straight up bribe the sheriff though. It can be like, hey bro, I'm not going to lie. There's contraband in here, but I'll give you 3 apples and you just don't worry about it.
Yeah.
It can be like,
it's so much fun.
Or then.
But okay. Yeah. Fun to them. But they, oh my God, it was the most infuriating experience of my life, because playing with these guys, you have them. No logic in terms of how they're determining who's bringing in contraband. I'm like, dude, I've never brought in contraband. Every time you've checked me, it's been clear. But they're like, don't trust it. Gonna bring her. Gonna check it out. And I'm like, really? Really? What would make you think that? Every past evidence, science would prove otherwise. And they're just like, nah. And this is like every time that you're like, why would you make that choice? They're like, let's make that choice.
This is why Casey's wonderful, because she would tell us the truth. We'd be like, nah, you're lying. We'd open up the bag and it would actually benefit her every time. And she was so mad just because it defied any sort of logic.
It makes no sense. If you've ever heard of prisoner's dilemma, like why would you... It's tit for tat. Is okay.
With that said, Sheriff of Nottingham is a great game. It is super fun.
It's just a blast.
And if you have a little bit of chaos within you, let it out.
Yeah, let that chaos get roll, crazy. Baby. I won that game. So Sheriff of Nottingham, great game. Very simple, but full of lying. And it's just a very raucous time. That's wonderful. So that's number 4, Sheriff from Nottingham. Number 3 is Evolution, which is designed by Dimitri Nore, Dominic Krapuchetes,
yes,
and Sergei Machin, and it was released in 2014. Evolution, I love. Evolution is a game where you're getting a new species, and then you're putting different traits on those species. So it could be like horns, or fat tissue, or cooling frills, or...
You have a really long neck.
Exactly. And you're putting all these different traits on, and all those traits are making you more and more efficient at feeding and getting food and building your population and building your body size. And your whole goal in the whole game is just to eat the most food, for your species to eat more food than everyone else's. But then some people can also put a trait on themselves that makes them a carnivore, because everyone is automatically a herbivore unless they put a trait on themselves that says carnivore. So then you start eating the other people. You start eating the other people's species, and you can make them go extinct if you eat them all the way, make all their population disappear, because you're just eating them. But then they can defend themselves. They can put horns on themselves to make them so that
you
if
evolve
you ever
your
eat
species.
Them, they hurt you whenever you eat them. And so the whole point of the game is you're just evolving these species and making these really weird species. Like, what was your species?
It's so fun. Oh my god, my last species that I made in Evolution, I was a burrowing little fat animal with like a long neck, so I would live underground and then I would just poke my neck up, look around, grab some food, and then go back down underground. But I was, imagine like an a shape of an onion, but with like a brontosaurus neck.
Pretty much, yeah.
But like not the brontosaurus feet. That's what I was picturing.
She never need to stop burrowing. She got a long neck, you know?
Yeah, right. It was so fun. It was my best species ever. Yeah.
And the game is cool because it's literally based in science. Yeah. It is accurate to science and the idea of evolving a species in order to survive and to procreate and grow.
Yeah, and scientists have actually come out and said, like, this is, if you're looking for a game to like accurately represent evolution, this is by far the best one, because that's kind of how evolution is. It's like evolution just tries stuff, you know. You're like, let's get some horns and see if that worked. No, didn't work. Okay, cool. You know, yeah. And then you're, because your species goes extinct all the time, and it's just it's very simple, it's very easy, but it's a really good time.
And it's beautiful.
And it's, yeah, the art is just, oh my gosh, it's just absolutely stunning. And so it's a really, really wonderful time. That's my number three, Evolution.
Good call.
Yeah. All right. My number two is widely considered, probably generally, if you ever look at like top 10 gateway games list, this is almost always in the top three. It's King of Tokyo. Ah, or you could say fun. King of New York, which is kind of the sequel, but King of New York is a little bit more complicated. Personally, I still think it's fine for brand new gamers. But King of Tokyo is even simpler, and it's just everyone picks a big monster, like a big kaiju, like think of like Pacific Rim kind of monster, and you're just beating the crap out of each other. Mostly, it's really what it is.
Yeah,
you're just chucking die, and you're like hitting each other. But a monster can go into Tokyo. So if you go into Tokyo, that's where you gain the most points. The whole point of the game is to get the most victory points. So you get the most victory points when you're inside Tokyo. But the problem is, when you're in Tokyo, whenever any other monster rolls the attack die, they always hit you. So you're getting beat up a lot if you're in Tokyo. But at the same time, you score the most points of the year when you're there. So you have to try and figure out,
because there's more people to stomp.
Exactly. Yeah. All the
more
people.
City it's, to destroy.
Exactly. More food. It's great. So you kind of have to judge when's a good time to go in. Like, how long can you stay in there before you find like, okay, I gotta leave Tokyo, because you're gonna die, because you can't die in the game. And it's just a blast. And it's just dice chugging. So it's a lot of luck and stuff, because you never know what you're gonna roll.
Did you say who designed that one?
Oh, I'm sorry, I did not say. Richard Garfield designed that game, and it was released in 2011. And I should have mentioned that Richard Garfield did it, because Richard Garfield, you guys know other stuff that he's done, because he's the one who designed Magic the Gathering, which is one of the biggest games ever. Yeah. You know, is the
Nerds
biggest,
Unite, Magic yeah. the Gathering.
And I don't think you've played this, Casey, but Mike, he also designed Robo Rally.
Hell yeah.
Love and he designed like 10 or 15 other games. He's one of the biggest designers ever. He's designed a ton of games.
What's Robo Rally?
It's a programming game. You have these little robots, and you get a bunch of different cards that say like turn left or go straight, and you make a little program. So you go, okay, I'm going to go straight, and I'm going to turn left. I'm going to go straight twice, and then turn right. And you're on this map that has all these conveyor belts that move you around the
board
and
stuff. Okay, cool.
And it's a really good time. Some people don't like it because it's very easy to mess with each other. Like, you'll bump each other, and then your whole program goes off the wire, and you end up in a totally different part of the board than you meant to. So some people don't like that because it just drives me crazy. I think it's a good time.
It's fun.
So he also designed that game. But King of Tokyo, going back to it, is just a blast. It's just dice chucking fun. Kaijus, just killing each other and stuff.
Kaijus is what they call those monsters in that movie, Pacific Rim.
Yeah, it's like Godzilla. Yeah,
Godzilla. And
that's where I learned that word.
Yeah, exactly. It's just cool. It's just a good time, dice chucking. Anyone can get into it. And
it's a dice chucking good time, brother.
Yeah. So number two is King of Tokyo, or King of New York, but King of Tokyo is a little bit better. All right, so now my number one. So my number one, this is the game that got me into gaming. Ah. So, and it's my favorite game ever. It might be my favorite game because it's also the thing that brought me into the hobby, but I also think it's a really, really good gateway game, and that's Pandemic.
Hell
so
yeah.
Pandemic is a game, like Casey likes, it's a cooperative game. So it's everyone versus the game. It's very simple. You really only ever do two or three things in the entire game. But Pandemic, the world, it's the board is just a map of the world, and it has all the major cities in the world. And in the world, disease is just running rampant. There are four diseases in the world: the black disease, the red disease, the yellow disease, and the blue disease. They're represented by cubes of that color, and they're just spreading. And your job is to find cures for the four diseases. So you're running around the world trying to treat the disease, and you're trying to get cards of all the same color. You need five blue cards to cure blue, five red cards to cure red, and so far, so on and so forth. So you're going around, you're trading cards, trying to get a set of five so that you can go to a research center.
Of the same color.
Of the same color. And then you're going to a research center and then turning those cards in, and then you cure that disease. If you cure all four, you win the game. The game is nice because it scales well. If you can play it with like two players, it's really fun. Four players, it's really fun. You can make it hard. We tend to play really, really hard because there are these cards in there that are called epidemics. And so when they get drawn, the diseases get worse. And the cities and the world just starts dying more and more and more.
And you guys play with more epidemics than usual?
Yeah, we
do.
Yeah, we usually go above like whatever the recommended thing is, just because we want to see if we can
survive
chaos. That's why
it's always hard to play with you guys.
Yeah, yeah. We play. I don't know why. I like hard cooperative games because we're all on the same team. So I'm like, I want this. Like, I would much rather win. I would much rather lose rather than win easily in a cooperative game. I just don't see a point, you know?
Pandemic's really cool too if you don't know a lot about geography, because you go around the whole world and you get to go to cities. Like, I didn't know where, like, there's just a lot of you know,
like Kinshasa
and Riyadh and all these different cities.
Yeah, it's really cool for that too.
Fun fact, as Nick mentioned earlier, the Essen Spiel Fair is the biggest kind of board game convention, and Essen is one of the cities in Pandemic. Now, Essen, unlike the rest of the cities, is much smaller.
Yeah, it's not a big
than
city.
Would be necessary, but because it's so important to board games, they kind of made a little nod, which
who
is cool.
Who designed this one?
It's designed by Matt Leacock, and it was released in 2008, and there's been a bunch of different versions of it to come out because the company that owns it, this company called Z-Man Games, it's their most popular game. And there's a game called Pandemic Legacy that came out last year that was just a massive hit. So now they're that's kind of like their go-to now. They're kind of churning out. But all the games they've been putting out, there's like a Cthulhu version now. There's Pandemic Iberia, which takes place in like 18th century Spain in the Iberian Peninsula. But all the games have been good. And so it's not like they're just churning them out, but they're garbage, which is nice because a lot of times, you know, same with movies, they do that. They're like, oh, this movie's good. Let's turn out a bunch of sequels that are horrible. You know, it doesn't, they've been not doing that.
The quality is high.
So those are my top five games. I love them all. I've taught them all before. They've always gone over very well. And they're a really, really good way to get into gaming. Because then the good part is you see this, like, oh, that was really fun. You're like, oh, yeah. Well, maybe you want to try this. And then maybe you want to try this. And then you can slowly bring them into the hobby. And they will.
You enfold them into the web. And then
what's your favorite game, Mike?
Oh, man. This is a tough one.
What's your favorite game, Casey?
Pandemic's right up there because, again, it got me into the hobby for a long time.
I started making Mike play it.
Yeah, for a long time, it was one of like the three games we had. Yeah. We had that, Settlers of Catan, and that was...
And Zombicide.
And Zombicide. So that's tough. Now, other games maybe have taken over, and specifically certain game mechanics like worker placement games, which is a whole nother podcast we could do about the specific types of games. But I'll say Pandemic is probably still number one because I wouldn't know these other games without it.
Mm-hmm.
How about you? Out of all the games that we've learned, is there anything that stands out or something that you hold particularly dear and close to your heart?
Oh, for sure. Legendary.
Legendary is dope.
It is so fun. So there's like this type of game that it seems really confusing. Dominion is a good example of it. It's called a deck building game.
I would say that's the best like gateway version of that mechanic.
And so you have all these cards and basically you're building your own little deck of cards and it's always growing throughout the whole game. And so people start with Dominion. Legendary is this like deck building game, but it's with Marvel superheroes.
Yeah.
And so you're fighting Marvel villains, and we have like Nick and Mike have bought every expansion
pretty much
of the game. So we there's like eight. How many heroes do we have now?
Like 82.
80 heroes. Like really deep into the Marvel archives, you know, like Hulkling and like, you know, just deep stuff.
Yeah,
Goliath.
That, like,
and,
I've never even heard of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is so fun. You get to fight all these bad guys. It's cooperative. So you're working with your other players to like beat up on these villains and it's awesome.
Yeah. It's probably top five for me. At least, or
so fun.
Top,
and it's so replayable.
Like, yeah. Yeah. Because there's never different the same. Villains. There's different big bad guys that are called masterminds, and then we have like eight. I one time was bored and decided to calculate it, and this is actually before we got our last expansion, and it was something in the quadrillions different, like variations of the game that you could play. And
so
it's
literally never play the same game twice.
Yeah, it's just an absolute blast. But I would say that's above Gateway because it's a little complicated. I would say it's a great what I would call like a next step game. Like a Gateway and what's the next step, that's where I would bring out like Legendary.
Cool. Oh, man, thank you so much. So, okay, that's awesome. So that's just a taste. If you just want to get into the hobby, those are a few great games you can try that are easy to learn, super duper fun, high replayability, and you can bring in with kind of any group of friends, and you'll be able to sit down, look at people in the eye, which we haven't done in quite some time, and like play a game and mess with each other or work together to save the world. It's super awesome. So thank you, Nick, so much.
I highly encourage our listeners to ask Bother Nick personally on his Twitter about rules and instructions and stuff, because he's really good at explaining games. So he's the one who's talking about this. Let's make him tell us all how to play all the games. If you want to try a new game and have questions, bother Nick about it.
Yeah. Hell yeah. That'd be awesome. So, Nick, before we get out of here, I want to test our knowledge because I didn't know that like board games went quite so far back. So I'm a little bit worried about it now. But if you would indulge us, I'm sorry you can't participate, but I think it is time for the
quiz, pop quiz. It's time for the pop quiz. Quiz, pop quiz. We'll laugh when Nick loses. Pop quiz!
Nick can't lose this one because I'm the one running it. I beat the system.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Yes. I didn't realize that's why I was like, I want to do that.
You so are the system.
Disprove that mean song that Casey forced me to sing.
You did sing it with heart and you cried very little. So I appreciate that. The professionalism there.
All right. Pop quiz. Let's do it. Okay. All right. So I got four questions. The first one is just kind of a numbers one because it's short. So how many copies of Monopoly you think have sold?
This is all different versions.
Ever?
There's a whole, yeah. That's why I was like, let's just do a quick numbers.
53 million.
All right.
Oh no, I think more.
Probably.
Oh, I'm gonna say 300 million.
Closer, 250.
Oh.
Which is a huge deal because if a game like a strategy game like a King of Tokyo or any of those games ever hits like 1 million copies sold, that is like, I'm talking in the stratosphere, astronomical hit.
That's
like,
Avatar.
250 million copies.
Exactly.
Like literally almost everyone in the US has a copy of Monopoly, if we're dividing it that way.
They say 500 million people have played it.
Wow. Yeah.
That's crazy.
So yeah. So think of like an astronomical hit, like something like a Ticket to Ride, which is a very popular game, or King of Tokyo. King of Tokyo recently hit like 1 million copies sold. And that's like one of the absolute gems. And it's like, this is done that 250 times.
Yeah. See, that's insane. Why we got to make podcasts like this is because the hobby is still quite small.
It really is.
In
yeah,
the
it's still
greater
kind of a niche hobby
realm. It's worldwide.
But it is growing a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's good.
Okay. All right. So that's our simple little one. Okay. So, number two, the Game of Life, when it originally came out, had four spaces that are no longer there. What were those spaces? And I'll say they're about the maybe not so great parts of life.
Oh,
there's
God.
Four spaces. I want two from each of you.
Oh.
Somebody dies.
Okay.
A divorce.
Okay.
Ooh. On teen pregnancy.
Oh, man.
Back when it first came out.
Being cuckolded by a stronger man, which leads to the divorce.
All right. No.
Getting caught in a swing lifestyle.
Although you're kind of close on your dying
one. On teen pregnancy?
On teen pregnancy. Yep. Teen mom is one of the categories. No, they were disgrace, which I was like, oh, disgrace.
Oh, God.
Poverty, prison, and suicide.
Oh my God.
That's messed up because the disgrace is obviously some poor
disgrace
kid coming out to his parents.
Just like disgrace.
Yeah, shunning.
You're a disgrace person. Yeah, so disgrace.
You still get a Game of Life token.
Poverty,
but
prison, and suicide were originally spaces. They're no longer on there.
I'm glad those are gone.
Good removal.
All right. So next one is question number three. Which board game had to fight for an online domain name against a porn company?
Oh my God.
Oh no.
And it'll be one you know. It's not like some weird like Klaus Goes to the Store.
I'm gonna
a famous game.
I'm gonna guess Ticket to Ride.
Oh no.
I don't know.
Hi Ho Cheerio.
Dang. Hungry Hungry Hippos.
Good old Candyland.
Oh, no.
Candyland.com was originally a pornography site, and they had to sue and sue and sue, and they eventually got
the thing that sucks is Candyland predates the internet. So they're like, are you serious?
Well, and that's the thing.
Like,
when
the permits have already gotten here.
When the internet surge happened, they're like, Candyland's like, oh, we should probably get a website because everyone gets website now. They look up Candyland.com and they did not.
Oh, you know what would be a good one? Don't Wake Daddy.
Oh,
God. Somebody get that porn site going.
So much for this family podcast.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. I don't have any question. Okay, number four. Which musician developed his stage name after a Ouija board told him he was the reincarnation of a 17th century witch?
Oh, my God.
I'll give you a hint. He's a rock guy.
Currently living?
Yes. Think of it now. Now, it's 17th century witch, so it's a woman's name.
Macy Gray?
I said his, but
it's
okay.
It's a dude.
I don't know. Elvis Costello.
17th century witch.
I don't know if the witch is like very well known. I'm not sure.
Who is a dude, but it would be a lady's name. Nothing.
Give up. Be my Frankenstein. Alice Cooper changed his stage name to Alice Cooper. After a Ouija board told him he was the reincarnation of a 17th century witch. According to him, that's how he said he got it. So whether or not that's true, I'm going to go with that's true because that's awesome.
That is dope. Man, that's crazy. Okay, my man, that was the briefest of introductions to board games. Believe me, we got to do more. We got to come back, but there is no more time this week. So thank you so much, you guys, for listening. Please do us a favor. Write to us what games you like and what games you know. Check us out on our social medias. We want to know what you play because there might be something we've never heard of that's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. We got to play the Royal Carrots of whatever. You know, there's all these sorts of games that we don't know about. So please tell us what you're into playing, what you'd like to try. We'll give you recommendations that go beyond what we talked about here. So please do check us out on our social medias and give us a rating on iTunes for this podcast because we're bringing you guys such a great hobby. You don't even know the gift you've been given just yet.
Yeah.
So give us a gift back with a 5-star rating on iTunes or whatever podcast app you use to listen to us. So thank you so
much
for that.
Please, it'll help so much for other people find the show.
Yes.
For them to find the show. If you give us a rating on iTunes, even if you hate us, you know, let us know. We're open for dialogue. Yeah. And tweet at Nick at Ovalface Elite.
Yep.
So he can give you game instructions.
And he'll allow non-ovals to interact if it's specifically about board games that have oval boards.
Otherwise, find us at The Brothers Murph on all forms of social media.
Yeah. And I think for now, I have been Michael Lee Murphy.
I'm Nick Murphy.
Casey Brown.
And we are imploring you, as always, to stay curious and keep playing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.